Welcome to the Not Old Bitter Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Partnership Program, our guest today, Grace Costantino, is one of the new breed of federal government employees, young, digitally savvy, and very excited and passionate about her work. Grace Costantino is also an award-winning leader among her peers, teaching, tutoring, and communicating in support of the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History. Grace Costantino is truly talented, and it's a pleasure to hear from her today.
But one of the places that you can see the contributions of especially early women in science are natural history books and publications. And so for the Biodiversity Heritage Library, we have been digitizing many of these books by and illustrated by early women in science and been making them freely available to the world.
That, of course, was our guest today, Grace Costantino. Ms. Costantino will be speaking at the Smithsonian Associates program titled The Rise of Women in Science, 250 Years of Trailblazers, along with Wayne State University science historian Marcia Redman, July 10th at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C. And we'll have links up to Grace Costantino's impressive bio, her websites, her books and articles, etc. But she's here with us today. As all Not Old Better audiences are trailblazers on our paths to reinvention, we're interested in and committed to learning and others who have blazed trails. Certainly, Grace Costantino is a trailblazer, and I think you'll love this interview. Join me in welcoming today via Skype to the Not Old Better Show, Smithsonian Associates Art of Living Series, Grace Costantino.
You know, over the centuries, the sciences have been predominated by men, but women have actually long contributed to the sciences, although they were often invisible. Their work was often not widely or properly recognized. But one of the places that you can see the contributions of especially early women in science are natural history books and publications. And so for the Biodiversity Heritage Library, we have been digitizing many of these books by and illustrated by early women in science and been making them freely available to the world. So in my talk at the Smithsonian Associates event, I'll be highlighting some of these resources that we've made available through the Biodiversity Heritage Library.
Grace, talk to us a little bit about what the Biodiversity Heritage Library is all about. It's just this great name, but give us a little bit of the description and background behind it.
Sure. So the Biodiversity Heritage Library is an online library that provides free digital access to natural history, biodiversity-related books from library collections around the world. We are headquartered at the Smithsonian Libraries in Washington, D.C. We've been digitizing a large portion of the Smithsonian Libraries collections for the Biodiversity Heritage Library, including a large portion of the library's rare book collections. But in addition to Smithsonian Libraries, we also have partners around the world, over 60 institutions to date on every continent except Antarctica that are digitizing their own library collections, making those digitized versions available in BHL. So at our library portal, which can be accessed at biodiversitylibrary.org, through that single portal, you can access digitized versions of these natural history books from library collections across the globe. And to date, our collections include over 200,000 volumes, and that constitutes over 52 million pages. And they span the 15th all the way to the 21st century. One of the questions I often get is, what's the oldest book that you have in BHL? And right now, it is Pliny's Natural History. It was published in 1469, and it's actually the first published natural history book. And that particular volume was digitized from the Natural History Museum in London. So currently, that's our oldest book. You can see that our collections go back to the 15th century. But we also include modern publications all the way up to what was published just this year. We work with publishers and societies and other sorts of journals to secure permission to make in copyright content freely available through BHL as well. So all of this content can be accessed freely through our library portal. You can not only access it for free, but you can download and reuse it for free as well. And this has been really important, particularly within scientific research, because research in the biodiversity biological sciences depends on historic literature, even more so than many other fields of science. For instance, researchers who are studying different species, they need to be able to refer to the original species descriptions, to original accounts of research across the globe and across the centuries. So being able to access this literature is really critical to them being able to study and conserve life on Earth. And before we digitized these materials and made them freely available online, it was often very difficult for these researchers to be able to access the content that they needed for their research. And lack of access to this literature is a major impediment to the efficiency of scientific research. So by digitizing these materials, making them freely available online, we like to say that we're democratizing access to biodiversity knowledge and improving the efficiency of scientific research across the globe.
I think that is all really important. I'm going to go check out Pliny's Natural History. We'll put a link up in the various pages that offer information about you and the podcast we're doing today. But tell us a little bit more about women's contribution, because in my research, I actually found that there is a specific site that you've designated for BHL women. What are some of the resources that are there?
So we have created a collection of content that sort of has three different facets that relates to early women in science and natural history. So the resources we've created include a collection specifically of books that were either authored by or illustrated by women or that women otherwise contributed to. The second aspect of the content that we've created is a Flickr collection that is comprised of illustrations by women. These were illustrations that were published as part of these natural history books that we've digitized. So what we've done is we've uploaded those illustrations separately from those books into Flickr and then created this collection to make it even easier for people to be able to explore illustrations from some of these early women in science. So that's the second component of our sort of women in science highlight. And then the third thing that we've done is created an online exhibition about women in science. And as it sounds, the exhibition highlights different early women in science. It talks about their contributions to science, and it also links to publications that we've digitized in BHL that they contributed to. And this exhibition was created with funding that we received from the Smithsonian Women's Committee, and it's curated by Laurel Burns. So all of this content that I've just described, the digitized book collection, the Flickr collection, and the online exhibition, can all be accessed through our Women in Science page on the BHL website. And you can easily find that by going to the URL s.si.edu/BHL Women. And that's all lowercase.
That's helpful. Grace, I know that some of your interests lie in social media and crowdsourcing. Are you using some of those tools to also gather resources, or are you gathering resources in a kind of a typical Smithsonian way? It just seems like things have changed so much technologically that maybe there are people out there that want to find you as opposed to the kind of the reverse that you have to go sleuth for.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we actually do have several citizen science-related projects that we support with BHL, and these have led to us gaining more knowledge and enhancing the resources that we have about early women in science. One of the activities that we support is tagging of the images that we make available in Flickr. So we ask our users to help us tag these illustrations with the name of the species that are depicted in the image, for example. We also ask them to help us tag them with the names of the artists who created the images. And through this work, we have discovered additional women in science resources. For instance, it's not always immediately apparent who illustrated a particular image. So through these crowdsourcing and citizen science activities, we've had instances where the public and people who are volunteering for us have discovered that some of these illustrations were by women, and they've been able to add those tags so that we can identify additional women in science resources. And then this can also lead to additional information that we gain about women in science. We actually just had a really great example of this that we just published a blog post about, actually, and it relates to Susan Faraday. So she was an early woman working during the 19th century in Australia. She was an illustrator, but she also collected seaweed specimens. And she sent some of those specimens to one of the leading researchers on seaweed of the day. His name was William Henry Harvey, and he ultimately ended up naming a species of seaweed after Susan to thank her for the contributions that she had made to his study of these different species. And he illustrated that species that he named after her, and we had uploaded that illustration to Flickr. One of our citizen scientists, Siobhan Leachman, she was tagging this album of images. She was tagging this particular illustration with the name of the species, and through that tag, she ended up discovering that the species was named after Susan Faraday. She did this additional research into Susan Faraday. She ultimately put together a Wikipedia page for Susan, talking about her different contributions to science. And all of this was discovered because we had uploaded an image to Flickr that had been named after this woman in science.
We are with Grace Costantino, is going to be appearing at the Smithsonian Associates Program July 10th at the Ripley Center. I wonder if we can jump from Pliny's 15th century all the way up to maybe present day or within the last century and give us a story. I read a story that you'd actually supplied me that I thought just was fascinating about Alice Eastwood. And the work that she did.
Alice's story is a really great story. So as we sort of get closer to the present day, the era that we're in now, you start to see women being more involved in scientific institutions specifically. And Alice is sort of an example of how we see this start to happen more and more as we move into the 20th century. So Alice was born in Toronto in 1859. She spent her teenage years in Colorado. During her early career, she was a school teacher, but she always had an interest in natural history, particularly botany. So in her spare time, she would explore the botany of the American West in the region that she was working as a school teacher. And she was self-taught, so she used botany books that she had available to her to teach herself about botany, to teach herself about botanizing. And through these activities, she actually became fairly well-known in the botany world. Also fairly well known as a guide to people who are coming into the area to sort of explore the natural history of the region. And as she gained that reputation, she came to the notice of other botanists working during that time, especially another woman in science botanist during that time named Catherine Brandegee. She was a curator of the herbarium at the California Academy of Sciences. Catherine was. She found out about Alice. She invited Alice to come and visit the California Academy of Sciences and to write articles for a botanical journal that Catherine had started with her husband called Zoe. And through that relationship, it grew to the point that Catherine actually ended up taking a pay cut in order to bring Alice on as a co-curator of the herbarium at the California Academy of Sciences. So Alice went to work at the herbarium there in the 1890s. And then in this capacity, Alice oversaw the growth of the herbarium, often through her own collecting activities out in the American West, particularly California, Utah, and Colorado. And she really was a pioneering woman for her time for many different reasons, not only for being this self-taught botanist who ended up working at this scientific institution, but even through some of the activities that she did in order to collect this material. So, for instance, a lot of the regions that she would botanize in to collect specimens were difficult to negotiate in the long skirts that women wore of the time. So she ended up fashioning a skirt that could be buttoned down the center to make pants so that it would be easier for her to negotiate these different landscapes and collect these materials.
Well, Grace Costantino, thank you so much for joining us today. That story about Alice Eastwood, as well as many other stories about the rise of women in science over 250 years of trailblazing and contributions will be shared by Grace on July 10th at 6:45 at the Ripley Center in downtown Washington, D.C. Grace, thanks so much for your time today. I know you are very busy, and we certainly appreciate all that you've brought today and all that you'll be bringing on July 10th. But thank you again, and we're looking forward to seeing you and hearing more from you.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me talk about women in science today.
Great. Thank you, Grace. My thanks to Grace Costantino and Smithsonian Associates for the Art of Living series. Remember, you can find more information via the links and websites at smithsonianassociates.org, and you can see Grace speaking along with Marcia Richmond on The Rise of Women in Science, 250 Years of Trailblazers, on July 10th at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C. We, of course, will put links up to all of Grace's information, all the many links, and all of her published works. I want to encourage all my audience to go and look at some of these illustrations from the Biodiversity Heritage Library. Thanks, everybody. Thank you.